Several witnesses were called who had known her for many years. said she, the cousin of the unhappy child who was murdered, or rather his sister, for I was educated by and have lived with his parents ever since and even long before his birth. It may therefore be judged indecent in me to come forward on this occasion, but when I see a fellow creature about to perish with the cowardice of her pretended friends, I wish to be allowed to speak, that I may say what I know of her character. I am well acquainted with the accused. I have lived in the same house with her at one time for 5, and at another for nearly 2 years. During all that period, she appeared to me the most amiable and benevolent of human creatures. She nursed Madame Frankenstein, my aunt, in her last illness, with the greatest affection and care, and afterwards attended her own mother during her tedious illness, in a manner that excited the admiration of all who knew her. After which she again lived in my uncle's house, where she was beloved by all the family. She was warmly attached to the child, who is now dead, and acted towards him like a most affectionate mother. For my own part, I do not hesitate to say that notwithstanding all the evidence produced against her, I believe and rely on her perfect innocence. She had no temptation for such an action. As to the bauble on which the chief proof rests, if she had so earnestly desired it, I should have willingly given it to her, so much do I esteem and value her. A murmur of approbation followed Elizabeth's simple and powerful appeal, but it was excited by her generous interference, and not in favour of poor Justine, on whom the public indignation was turned with renewed violence, charging her with the blackest ingratitude. She herself wept as Elizabeth spoke, but she did not answer. My own agitation and anguish was extreme during the whole trial. I believed in her innocence and knew it. Could the demon who had, I did not a minute doubt, murdered my brother, also in his hellish sport, have betrayed the innocent to death and ignominy? I could not sustain the horror of my situation, and when I perceived that the popular voice and the countenances of the judge had already condemned my unhappy victim, I rushed out of the court in agony. The tortures of the accused did not equal mine. She was sustained by innocence, but the fangs of remorse tore my bosom and would not forego their hold. I passed a night of unmingled wretchedness. In the morning, what there really is now is the whole world would believe me to be if I disclosed the object of my suspicions. I hastened to return home, and Elizabeth eagerly demanded the result. "My cousin," replied I, "it is decided as you may have expected. All judges have rather that 10 innocent should suffer than that 1 guilty should escape. But she has confessed." This was a dire blow to poor Elizabeth, who had relied with firmness upon Justine's innocence. "Alas," said she, "how shall I ever again believe in human goodness? Justine, whom I loved and esteemed as my sister, how could she put on those smiles of innocence only to betray? Her mild eyes seemed incapable of any severity or guile, and yet she's committed a murder." Soon after, we heard that the poor victim had expressed a desire to see my cousin. My father wished her not to go, but said that he left it to her own judgment and feelings to decide. "Yes," said Elizabeth, "I will go, although she is guilty, and you, Victor, shall accompany me. I cannot go alone." The idea of this visit was torture to me, yet I could not refuse. We entered the gloomy prison chamber and beheld Justine sitting on some straw at the farther end. Her hands were manacled, and her head rested on her knees. She rose on seeing us enter, and when we were left alone with her, she threw herself at the feet of Elizabeth, weeping bitterly. My cousin wept also. "Oh, Justine," said she, "why did you rob me of my last consolation? I relied on your innocence, and although I was then very wretched, I was not so miserable as I am now." "And do you also believe that I am so very, very wicked? Do you also join with my enemies to crush me, to condemn me as a murderer?" Her voice was suffocated with sobs. "Rise, my poor girl," said Elizabeth. "Why do you kneel if you are innocent? I am not one of your enemies. I believed you guiltless, notwithstanding every evidence, until I heard that you had yourself declared your guilt. That report, you say, is false, and be assured, dear Justine, that nothing can shake my confidence in you for a moment but your own confession." "I did confess, but I confessed a lie. I confessed that I might obtain absolution, but now that falsehood lies heavier at my heart than all my other sins. The God of heaven forgive me. Ever since I was condemned, my confessor has besieged me. He threatened and menaced until I almost began to think that I was the monster that he said I was. He threatened excommunication and hellfire and my last moments if I continued obdurate. Dear lady, I had none to support me. All looked on me as a wretch, doomed to ignominy and perdition. What could I do? In an evil hour, I subscribed to a lie, and now only am I truly miserable." She paused, weeping, and then continued. "I thought with horror, my sweet lady, that you should believe your Justine, whom your blessed aunt had so highly honored and whom you loved, was a creature capable of a crime which none but the devil himself could have perpetrated. Dear William, dearest, blessed child, I soon shall see you again in heaven, where we shall all be happy, and that consoles me, going as I am to suffer ignominy and death. Oh, Justin, forgive me for having for one moment distrusted you. Why did you confess? But do not mourn, dear girl, do not fear. I will proclaim, I will prove your innocence, I will melt the stony hearts of your enemies by your tears and prayers. You shall not die. You, my playfellow, my companion, my sister, perish on the scaffold? No, I could never survive so horrible a misfortune. Justine shook her head mournfully. I do not fear to die, she said. That time is past. God raises my weakness and gives me courage to endure the worst. I leave the sad and bitter world, and if you remember me and think of me as of one unjustly condemned, I am resigned to the fate awaiting me. Learn from me, dear lady, to submit in patience to the will of heaven. During this conversation, I had retired to a corner of the prison room where I could conceal the horrid anguish that possessed me. Despair? Who dared talk of that? The poor victim who on the morrow was to pass the awful boundary between life and death felt not, as I did, such deep and bitter agony. I gnashed my teeth and ground them together, uttering a groan that came from my inmost soul. Justine started. When she saw who it was, she approached me and said, "Dear sir, you are very kind to visit me. I do hope you do not believe that I am guilty." I could not answer. "No, Justine," said Elizabeth, "he is more convinced of your innocence than I was, for even when he heard that you had confessed, he did not credit it. I truly thank him. In these last moments, I feel the sincerest gratitude towards those who think of me with kindness. How sweet is the affection of others to such a wretch as I am. Removes more than half my misfortune, and I feel as if I could die in peace, now that my innocence is acknowledged by you, dear lady, and your cousin." Thus the poor sufferer tried to comfort others and herself. She indeed gained the resignation she desired. But I, true murderer, felt the never-dying worm alive in my bosom, which relied on no hope or consolation. Elizabeth also wept and was unhappy, but hers also was the misery of innocence, which, like a cloud that passes over the fair moon, for a while hides but cannot tarnish its brightness. Anguish and despair had penetrated into the core of my heart. I bore a hell within me which nothing could extinguish. We stayed several hours with Justine, and it was with great bless and preserve you. May this be the last misfortune that you will ever suffer. Live and be happy, and make others so. And on the morrow, just as he died, Elizabeth's heart-rending eloquence failed to move the judges from their settled conviction on the criminality of the sadly sufferer. My passionate and indignant appeals were lost upon them, and when I received their cold answers and heard the harsh, unfeeling reasoning of these men, my purposed avowal died away on my lips. Thus I might proclaim myself a madman, but not revoke the sentence passed upon my wretched victim. She perished on the scaffold as a murderess. From the tortures of my own heart, I turned to contemplate the deep and voiceless grief of my Elizabeth. This also was my doing, and my father's woe and the desolation of that late so smiling home, all was the work of my thrice accursed hands. Ye weep, unhappy ones, but these are not your last tears. Again shall ye rise the funeral wail, and the sound of your lamentations shall again and again be heard. Frankenstein, your son, your kinsman, your dearly much-loved friend, he who would spend each vital drop of blood for your sakes, who has no thought nor sense of joy, except as it is mirrored also in your dear countenances, who would fill the air with blessings.